Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you for joining America's Second Revolution with your host, Hedgemaster. For tonight's show, if you want to be heard, please call in. You do so two ways. One, if you're listening via internet at blogtalkradio.com, you can enter any comments or questions in the chat room. The other option is to call in by dialing area code 347-857-3292. You can listen to the show at any time and press the number 1 on your dial pad, and Hedgemaster will be alerted that you'd like to make a pose a comment or ask a question. Hedgemaster will be answering questions towards the end of the program. Visit Hedgemaster's blog at www.hedgemastermb.blogspot.com. He currently has posts that pertain to the show that he will be giving tonight. You may email him at hedgemastermb@gmail.com. Hedgemaster's thoughts, speech, writings, and findings are of his sole opinion. Tonight, Hedgemaster will discuss Muslim Sharia versus Christian law. Why is Sharia law so destructive to America, Europe, and other non-Muslim countries? Please welcome Hedgemaster.
Good evening. Good evening. Well, we have to follow up on Greta's wonderful announcement because I think it has a whole lot to do with what I'm going to talk about tonight. And that is that President Obama has snubbed the Paris crowd showing solidarity with Muslim, you know, against these Muslim extremists with his absence. 40-plus leaders of the world let their presence be known and their feelings be known. But apparently the president has other ideas about it, and we're going to discuss that tonight. Moving on, I did promise you a little bit of past history. In other words, how Islam came about, when it grew, how it grew, where it grew, etc., and so on. And I want to go quickly through that because it kind of helps you feel things. Way back in 632 to 634, you know, Abu Bakr conquered polytheists, converted to, you know, they had to convert or die, and the beginning of Mohammedism began to grow. And of course, Mohammedism is the beating heart of the Muslim religion. And they went on in 633 to defeat Christian Byzantines. They went in 635 to Damascus. They went and got into Jerusalem in 638. They got into Egypt in 641, Syria in 641. And I can just move right on all the way up to the 8th century. And they kind of hit their peak, if you will, in the 8th century on this kind of movement when they conquered South Italy. Then it kind of, you know, it stayed that way. They occupied what is now almost every part of Europe, a lot of Asia, Africa, North Africa certainly. So, you know, this was a huge caliphate. This was a world-shaping caliphate. And then it started to turn around, some of it from infighting and some of it because the other sects, including the Christians, got tougher. It started turning around in about 1059, and that's when the Pope's troops captured Jerusalem. Christians started doing their first crusades in 1099, and 1094 was the beginning of things. Most retaliation really began in about 1095. Five major armies supported by the Pope went forward. 1097, moderate success, you know, with Palestine, Jerusalem, and Israel. Latin colonialists established Levant in four states. I know Levant has a different meaning now, but the state of Levant actually originated back then. To let you know, when you hear about the state of Levant, which includes a lot of the Middle East, you at least know where that started. It started back in the 10th century, late 10th century. Muslim reformed and won back much of what they lost. 1118 to 1174, Muslim rule was once again expanded. Saladin, the leader, beat the heck out of the Christians in a war. 1187, Pope Gregory proclaimed the Third Crusade. 1192, the southern coast of the Mediterranean recovered by the Christians. The Fourth Crusade was in 1219, 1238. It flopped badly. They got their butts beat. Jerusalem was recaptured by Muslims again in 1244. 1270 was last crusade. They did far better. What happened here was, going into the 15th and 16th century, is most by that time of the borders of a lot of the countries, and as results of these wars were kind of started being solidified. And in 1600s, the 30-year war happened. That was a war between the Protestants and Catholics fighting for the European peace that had basically been recovered from the Muslims. And then, of course, the Persian Wars happened in the 18th century. And you had the France-Tarzan War, and so that was there. And then, of course, you had the Russia-Persian Wars, and so through the 18th century. That's a quick history. And what it shows you in retrospect is that there was a tremendous movement of one group, one religious group, Christians, against another very religious group, Muslims. And there was early victory, there was late victory, there was early defeat, late defeat, but the borders finally situated themselves and stabilized somewhere. And what happened was, in about 1725, in the Arabian peninsulas, a guy by the name of Wahhab met with a guy by the name of Saud. They both had families. They joined together in 1725, and the family Saud and the family Wahhab formed what is now known as the Saudi tribe. And the Saudi tribe basically is the dominant tribe, became the dominant tribe in the 1700s and 1800s. And in fact, when the oil people went over to the Middle East to drill for oil and establish Saudi Arabia, they picked that tribe because they were the meanest, most dominant tribe in the area, and they knew they could bring peace to the area so they could drill for their oil. And that's how Saudi Arabia actually became really formed. So it gives you a background. It gives you a little background. Now, the Shiites, again, are very separate. The Shiite families are based on a religion by the son of Muhammad, not Muhammad. And they're very, very different. And they have had wars between each other a lot. They established themselves in what's now known as Persia and Iran, and they're happy. They got their land, they got their country, they're Shiites. They're a very small minority of Islamists, though. The nations of Islam are 93% Shiite, or I'm sorry, Sunni, and only 7%, 7 to 9% Shiites. So you've got this huge offset of Sunni population as compared to Shiite population within the Islamic realm. By the way, equally 93% of all terror is created by the Sunni sect. So that kind of evens out. I want to go over the differences in beliefs, because it's kind of important. Ultimate reality, Christianity says there's one creator God. Islam says there's one creator God. The nature of God, we say there's a trinity, one substance, three people. Islam says one substance, one people. Christians see God in Christianity. Muslims see Allah in Islam. Spiritual beings, angels and demons for Christians, angels, demons, and jinn for the Islamists. Revered humans to Christians, saints, churches, and fathers. In Islam, prophets, imams, especially in Shiites, the imams are there. Identity of Jesus, Son of God, God incarnate, Savior of the world, that's the Christian. True prophet of God whose message has been corrupted is the Islamists. Birth of Jesus, virgin birth, virgin birth. Death of Jesus, death by crucifixion. But Islam believes that he did not die but ascended bodily into heaven. A disciple died in his place. Resurrection of Jesus affirmed by the Christians and Islam denied since he did not die. Second coming of Jesus affirmed. Mode of divine revelation through prophets and Jesus as God, himself recorded in Bible. That's for the Christians. For the Muslims, through Muhammad recorded in the Quran. And that's where the difference lies. Just put that in your mind. Everything else was pretty similar until we got to that. Human nature, original sin inherited from Adam. In Islam, it's equal ability to do good or evil. Means of salvation, correct belief, faith, good deeds, sacraments. Some Protestants emphasize faith alone. In Islam, it's correct belief, good deeds, five pillars. God's role in salvation, predestination, various forms of grace for the Christians, predestination for Islam. Good afterlife, eternal heaven, eternal paradise. Bad afterlife, eternal hell, and temporary purgatory, as opposed to just eternal hell in Islam. Islam is respected as a fellow monotheistic religion, but Muhammad is not seen as a true prophet. That is how the Christians believe. Christians are respected as people of the book, but they have mistaken beliefs and only partial revelation. That's what the Islams believe. Sacred text, Bible, Old Testament, Jewish Bible, Quran. Inspiration of sacred text, literal word of God, inspired human accounts, literal word of God in the Quran. Status of biblical prophets, true prophets, true prophets. See the New Testament, see the Quran. Status of Jewish Bible, canonical but useful as a corrupted, inspired text. Status of New Testament, canonical but useful as a corrupted, inspired text. What I'm saying here is they believe kind of the same, but the whole thing is the society is completely different. Now, you got to understand, I'm going to come to a point on this, so stay with me on this, because you really got to stay with me. Don't get bored at this. The founders and the early leaders were Jesus and St. Peter and Paul. And, of course, for Islam, it was Muhammad. See Jesus Christ and Apostle Paul. See Prophet Muhammad. Aramaic and Greek for us, Arabic for them. Adherent worldwide today, 2 billion for us, 1.3 billion for them. Adherent in the United States, 159 million versus 1.1 million for them. That's growing rapidly, by the way. Adherents in Canada, 21 million to 500,000. Compare Catholicism and Protestantism, compare Shiite and Sunni. Largest in the world, that's us. Second largest in the world, that's them. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because there's really one thing that really separates both, and that is law. Law, L-A-W, law. We have civil law way, way back, way, way, way back. Before the 1600s, we were more similar than you think, because we didn't have law as we have it now. But what happened? Because remember, way back in the early days, the Christian church, the Pope, had control of armies. And for religious reasons only, he could send those armies out and destroy whatever he wanted to destroy. Maybe good, maybe bad, but he had the power. We had warlike popes. On the other hand, the Islamists had their leaders, and they could send them out for religious reasons because they had the Quran saying that they must fight, they must destroy the infidels, and they could send them out to destroy. In about the 1600s, somewhere in there, and it's cloudy. I've done so much research on this, but it's very cloudy. The Christians started changing. They started putting together civil organizations that basically became governments. And as the populations grew, the governments grew stronger. And what happened was religion was put behind civic law. Civic law was formed. That's the law that we know today. That's what our police forces exercise. That's what our state police exercise. That's what our Constitution was based on. We started using civic law, and religious law or religious leaning was pushed into a secondary position. Now think about that, and really think about that for a second, because now you see the difference. Sharia law is a direct application of religious law. Religious law is still an application by the Muslim society. They are based off of religious law. We no longer are based off of religious law. We are based off of governmental or civic law. And by the way, some of those civic laws in certain countries can be horrible. Some of them can allow torture. Some of them can allow beheading. Some of them can allow all kinds of government to do all it wants to people. But it is civic law as opposed to religious law. And when you read the Quran, the religious law is pretty tough. Very tough. I would tell you that it's much tougher on women than it is on men, but it's a very tough law. And so now when we see things happening, when we see terror, what we call terror, it's not necessarily terror to them. This is according to their law. The Quran says you have to resist. You have to fight the infidel. I mean, if you read the Quran, it's you know, Sharia law is a very, very tough law. And Sharia law is the law of the Quran. Sharia law is a subset of the Quran. It says, we are your law. We have taken from the Quran the teachings of Muhammad, and we've created law around those teachings. Let me give you some examples. Theft is punishable by amputation of the right hand. That's Quranic law. Criticizing or denying any part of the Quran is punishable by death. Now, that doesn't say you got to be a follower of the Quran. It just says that if you criticize or deny any part of the Quran, that's punishable by death. I don't care who you are. criticizing or denying Muhammad as a prophet is punishable by death. Can you imagine somebody walking around town criticizing Jesus and somebody just kills him, beheads him? Criticizing or denying Allah is punishable by death. A Muslim becomes a non-Muslim. You stop your faith. And I think right away of Hirsi Ayan Ali, and if you don't know who that is, shame on you. She is probably the heroine of most women who have escaped from Islam. A non-Muslim who becomes a non-Muslim is punishable by death. Can you imagine a Catholic changing to be a Protestant? Somebody comes along and beheads him? A non-Muslim who leads a Muslim away from Islam is punishable by death. So you got a guy going around converting people. A non-Muslim who marries a Muslim woman. A non-Muslim man who marries a Muslim woman is punishable by death. A man can carry an infant girl. A man can marry an infant girl and consummate a marriage when she is 9 years old. It's allowed by Islamic law. A woman's clitoris should be cut out, per Muhammad's words in Book 41. If you read that a bit further, it's to take away the pleasure so the woman can serve the husband. A woman can have one husband, but a man can have four wives. A man can unilaterally divorce his wife, but a woman needs her husband's consent, approval to divorce. A man can beat his wife for insubordination, any kind of insubordination. Testimonies of four male witnesses are required to prove rape against a woman. A woman who has been raped cannot testify in court against a rapist. A woman's testimony in court, allowed only for proper cases, carry half the weight of a man's. A female heir inherits half of what a male heir would inherit. A woman cannot drive a car if it leads to upheaval. Well, in Saudi Arabia, they're just now starting to relax that law. You know, up until last year, no woman could drive a car in Saudi Arabia. A woman who's been raped cannot testify in court against her rapist. A woman's testimony in court is allowed only in property cases and carries half the weight of a man's. A female heir inherits half of what a male inherits, cannot drive a car. A woman cannot speak alone to a man who is not her husband or relative. Meat must be eaten. Meat to be eaten must come from animals that have been sacrificed to Allah. Muslims should engage and lie to non-Muslims to advance Islam. Those are some of the Islamic laws. And what I worry about, the reason I brought that up and spent that much time on it, is part of what I want to talk about tonight is that we have cases now in America where President Obama, with CARE, that's the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, are actually going into the states now to stop states from banning Sharia law. There are a lot of states that have court cases in court trying to ban Sharia law from their state because they don't want this kind of problem that you see happening now where you have these no-go places in Europe and they're trying to avoid these in America. By the way, we do have them in America, and I'll talk about that a little later, but they're trying to prevent these things from happening, these no-go places that are just affecting Europe so badly. I mean, all we have to do is look at Europe, look at Belgium, look at Sweden, and other places in Europe that are just France, of course, England, having a terrible time because they allowed these Islamic councils to kind of help their own civic institutions, and of course that immediately turned into a no-go. Because Sharia law is so obscenely different than our laws. So we have that forming in Europe, and it's really, really damaging Europe very badly. I mean, you can talk to just about anybody you want, read anything you want, you will find out the damage caused in Europe by these things is getting larger and larger daily. So here we are, and we see this in Europe. I mean, anybody with common sense sees what's happening in Europe and says, boy, I don't want that in America, all except our president. Our wonderful president goes around and has ACLU and CAR, whatever you want to call it, an Islamic organization funded by Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, running around friendly with the FBI, friendly with America, friendly with our president, and they're going around trying to insert Sharia law. And by the way, they are preventing bans on Sharia law. Oklahoma, Florida, you know, there's a lot of states that are banning Sharia law, right? Well, we found out in Florida there was a law, SB 58, you can look that up, SB 58, Florida law, was attempted, and it didn't pass. 100% of the Democrats in the state legislature voted against banning Sharia law. The ACLU, given huge donations, was sent with them to fight to allow Sharia law. So the ACLU is down there saying, you got to let Sharia law happen. Of course, CARE was there. You know, the good old council was there with their wonderful money, and they got a lot of it. And they spread it around. Now, they had lobbyists all over the place, and they won by one vote. So Florida can't ban Sharia law. So when you talk about no-go, what's the first thing we have to do to prevent no-goes like what's in Europe right now causing all these terrible problems? And believe me, if you go over there and talk to people quietly and privately, because there's a lot of people frightened to death of this, and you talk to them, they say, yeah, we're afraid to go out at night. We can't let our young ladies go out. Even Christian young ladies have to wear scarves and veils. Why? Because the Muslim guys, the rampant thugs out there, go out in the city, and if they see a girl without a veil, they give her what's called a smiley face. They slash her with a knife. This is what happens. So you've got this, quite frankly, terrible thing happening in Europe right now in a lot of places, and it's getting worse. You're just now hearing about it. I mean, you're hearing these incidences like happened in France, which is really nothing. I mean, the societies are being affected by this. Whole neighborhoods are being affected by this. This is really very bad. So here we are. We're trying to ban it, and President Obama wants to allow it. Why? What possible earthly reason could a president of the United States, supposedly to follow our Constitution, want to allow a foreign law, especially Sharia law, into our state laws? It's just unbelievable. But it's happening. As we speak, it is happening. So, we have this no-go thing. Well, it can't happen here, thank goodness. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. It has already happened. We already have Muslim terrorist enclaves growing. There's some in Texas. There's some in other states. They're already growing because there are some states that won't ban Sharia law. They can't ban Sharia law because the president is spending a whole lot of money to make sure they can. Your money. your tax money. So anyway, we have no-gos starting up. We have one in Mahmoudburg, Texas. A clerical project investigation has discovered a jihadist enclave in Texas where a deadly shooting took place in 2002. There's a surprise. The enclave belongs to a network of Muslims and Americans, a radical group linked to Pakistani militant group called Jamal, I can't hardly read this, Ul-Fugra. Its members are devoted followers of the Sheikh Mubarak al-Ghitani, an extreme cleric in Pakistan. Now, this isn't the only guy. Come on. These guys are all over the Middle East, and you got a whole lot of, you know, money coming over here to build these little wonderful villages. 2007 FBI records record that MOA members have been involved in at least 10 murders, one disappearance, three firebombings, one attempted firebombing, two explosive bombings, and one attempted bombing. There you go. What a nice village. 2007 record states to MOA members, let's see, compound in Texas described by the FBI as an enclave and communal living site is in Brazoria County along County Road 3 near Sweeney, Texas. The MOA referred to it as a Texas commune as Mahmoudburg in online instructions for a parade. Locals told ACT members they have heard gunfire coming from the commune. I just go on and on and on. This is crazy. So why is it? Here's the question. Why is, and it's right here in this wonderful article, allowed to operate in this country? The answer is the State Department is not designated as a foreign terrorist organization. The group is thus permitted to organize until the U.S., until that happens. Well, and it's also the fact that, you know, that, again, we have this thing coming from the very on high, our president, basically telling ACLU and other parts of the government to go easy on Muslims in this country and to let them promote Sharia law in the states. Now, you know, I saw President Obama in the church he went to. It was not a mosque. But one has to question, because his father was Muslim, one has to question very seriously. You know, is he very, very sympathetic to that? Does he really? I mean, when he went over to Cairo in 2009, remember, that was right after he got elected. He went over to Cairo for this celebration oration, his first major speech as president of the United States. Where did he go? He went to Cairo, Egypt. He went to the university. And he gave his speech where a lot of leaders refused to attend. Why? Why did a lot of leaders refuse to attend this brand new, wonderful young president who goes over to Cairo to give his first speech? It's because he had reserved the first two rows of the Cairo University seating, which are very prestigious seats, for the Muslim Brotherhood. I have an article right here from Barry Rubin, and it says, this is in 2012, one argument we will increasingly hear is that President Barack Obama couldn't have done anything to change the events in the Middle East. This is in 2012 when things were happening, going pretty bad. It is ironic, of course, because when things are going well, he wanted to take credit as an inspiration for the Arab Spring. Let's remember, the president began, and this isn't from me, this is from the press, in October 16th, and this is international press. What's more important, he never noticed, was something critical Obama did. He went to Cairo, he gave his speech in which the Muslim Brotherhood leaders were seated in those first two prestigious rows, thus making it impossible for Egyptian and other officials to attend. Obama thus not only declared himself on the side of the Islamic opposition, but of the Islamic opposition. This is in 2012. So he did this in 2009, but this was published in 2012. What's even more important but never noticed was something critical Obama did. In discussing the Middle East and the Arab-speaking world, he exalted Islamic identity. Remember that for six decades, national, i.e. Arab identity, had dominated. But Obama, to the Arab-speaking world, exalted Islamic identity. So, we saw that early on, our president wanted to show that he approved of the more extreme groups of Islam. I mean, at that time, the Muslim Brotherhood was the dominant group of Islamic terror. They controlled most of North Africa. Much of the killings of the Christian Africans in the south parts of certain countries in Africa, being destroyed by the millions, were because of that domination. So this is what you got. Now, what we really ought to kind of at least spend a little time on is, what are we going to do about this? I mean, are we just going to sit there and wait until President Obama either leaves or doesn't leave? There are rumors, and I'm sure you've heard them, but there are rumors that he definitely intends on not leaving. I have talked on my radio show of a very close similarity of our president to the deceased Hugo Chavez out of Venezuela. His actions are very, very reminiscent of the exact actions Chavez used to take over Venezuela. It's almost like he's following that program. So are we going to have a president that attempts for the first time in our history? Although there was one other president that wanted to be a permanent president, but he died of a stroke. Do we know who that is? Do you know who it is? Come on. President died of a stroke in the last year of his official presidency. It's President Wilson. President Wilson. He wanted to be a leader for all times. He had plans to do that. And unfortunately, that stroke got in the way. But are we going that way? I mean, really, it's time to ask that question, because he is threatening right now. You hear him threaten all the time. If I don't get my way, I'll do it by executive order. Well, he lied to us about executive orders, which disturbed me greatly. It was a blatant lie. It was an on-purpose lie. It was an on-purpose obfuscation of the truth. The man lied, bald-faced, lied when he knew he was lying. Oh, I have issued less executive orders than President Bush and most other presidents. How about that? He didn't mention that he had issued record amounts of memorandum which carry exactly the same weight in law as an executive order. And he vastly outdid any president since Truman in those kinds of executive orders, memorandum, whatever you want to call them. They are exactly the same documents. They're called by two different names. They have the same weight in law. So am I to believe him now? When he comes up and says, oh, well, I'm here for the good of the people. Which people? I want to know which people. Is he here for the good of the Muslim Brotherhood, which he was very friendly with in 2009? Or is he really, really loyal to his very good friends in Qatar, who happen to be the same people who are funding ISIS and the Muslim Brotherhood, who he sold just last year $11 billion of our most sophisticated weaponry to, when there was good indications at that time that they were the primary supporters and funders of ISIS, and they were already well known to the world that they were the funders of the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, Saudi Arabia came out last year and said, hey, we don't have anything to do with Qatar. We don't have anything to do with their terrorist leanings and their terrorist funding. Now, when Saudi Arabia gets that nervous about it, you know that you got extremists in the house. There's a guy over in Qatar right now who used to be the leader of Afghanistan. Did you know that? Did you know that there's a guy in Qatar right now named Mullah Mohammed Omar? This is a revered killer. This is an Islamic killer. This guy has killed more people. You can't even start to imagine how many people this guy has killed with his armies. But he ran Afghanistan, and he just killed at random. And he followed the strictest Sharia law. A woman said anything bad, she was stoned to death, put in a pit, covered up, stoned to death, or beheaded. He's in Qatar now, and he's helping the emir, the new emir of Qatar, and they're just having a great time. They're funding ISIS. They're trying to take over all of the Middle East. They're spending a whole lot of money on everything, and you know they bought a whole bunch of weapons from our president, and he went to he took the emir over to West Point and watched his son graduate. They're buddies. It's nice to see. Unfortunately, this is our enemy. This is our enemy. This is the guy that wants jihad. Now, let me tell you a scary part. I say this every time I have a show because you need to hear it. Mullah Omar, who is one of the finest military leaders in the world, he's very, very intelligent, very good at what he does. He's got his terrorists over in Pakistan right now. You just heard about that terrible thing in Pakistan where that school was raided and all those children killed and slaughtered. That was Mullah Omar's people. That was Mullah Omar's army of terrorists. He's trying to destabilize Pakistan. Why? Why would he bother with Pakistan? Let's see. He's going to get Afghanistan back. As soon as the military forces of the army goes down to a minimum level, believe me when I tell you this, and you can put this on your calendar, a couple weeks after they leave and they're gone, Mullah Omar's army will all of a sudden magically resurrect itself and take back over Afghanistan. Boom, done. So all of this stuff we've been fighting for, it'll all revert the minute we leave. Why does he want Pakistan? He knows he's getting Afghanistan, which is a neighbor to Pakistan, obviously, back. Why does he want Pakistan? Oh, wait, I know. He wants the nuclear missiles and the nuclear weaponry. They have nuclear arms. They have nukes. They have big nukes, well-constructed nukes, and really, really good missiles that can go up to 4,000 miles. And he's trying to destabilize them. He's been trying for 2 years, by the way. This is not a short-term project. He's been trying for 2 or 3 years. Steadily working at it. Consummate worker, that guy. And he's trying to take it over. Oh, by the way, we helped him. Remember those five guys we traded for Bergdahl? Well, those five guys were his top chiefs. He wanted them back. And they got delivered to the front door of the palatial estate of the emir of Qatar, where Mullah Omar is. Now, the press, the wonderful press, you know, they're so gullible. Oh, well, the government said that those guys aren't allowed back in Afghanistan for a year. They never wanted to go back to Afghanistan. Their leader is in Qatar, where they were delivered by limousine. So, we have these situations going on, right? And, you know, I don't like to just belittle things. I like to talk about positive things as well. And some of the positive things we've going on is people are starting to understand this. Now, it's a little late for Europe. I mean, really, if I went over to Sweden, I was lucky enough to win an award to go over to Sweden to Gothenburg and to the capital, and I was lucky enough to get a plane trip and hotel and everything paid for me to go over there. And so as a young man, I went over there. I think I was 26, maybe 27, and I went over there. And, oh, my God, what a beautiful country. I went over there, thank goodness, in July when it was warm, and because I'm a warm-weather kind of guy. And I was just, I mean, it was so beautiful. I went to Uppsala, which is where the university is. So beautiful. I went to Stockholm. Oh, gorgeous. I mean, it just takes your breath away. It was so beautiful. And I even went down to Copenhagen for a little while, and it was marvelous. I just really enjoyed it. And I came home. And I made some friends, and now those friends are as old as I am, which means older than God, and we're, you know, getting aged. And I talked to them, and I said, how's things going? And they said, not good. I said, why? They said, because we are being Islamistized. And I said, Islamistized? He says, yeah. He said, we have guest workers that came over and they brought their families and they increased their numbers. And now our country is just invaded by Islamic beliefs that are causing all kinds of crime, killings, women getting raped, smiley faces, meaning scarring of faces when people don't wear veils, etc. and so on. He said, it's becoming an epidemic. The country is not as good as it once was. Boy, if you knew how good Sweden was back then, you'd feel really bad about that. But it's not just there. I mean, you've got this Islamic invasion going on, these no-goes. Once you allow Sharia law, that's it. And so if you know that is the key of their success, if you know that the one thing they must do in order to start doing their takeovers is that they have to get the government to allow Sharia law so they can set up their Sharia councils within their own communities and then control the community. That's how it's done. That's exactly how it's done. It's happened in England. It's happened in Belgium. It's happened in Sweden. It's happened all over Europe, and that's what it's done. And the key is they allowed Sharia law. Now let's go back to my conversation of several minutes ago. Why am I so against Sharia law? Why am I so absolutely, crazily adamant against any Sharia law placement in any state in the United States? It is because what we have in Mossberg, Texas. It is because we see the nucleus of what is forming that formed the incredible happenings now in Europe. We are at the very beginning stage. We're at the atom stage. And we're about to set up a series of atoms leading to a molecule that will become an element, that will become a state of being. And unless we stop it now, our children are going to be going through exactly the same kind of hell that is occurring in Sweden, that is occurring in Belgium, occurring in France as we speak. You do not want your children to be in that situation? How do we stop it? First, what we do is we get a national voice and say, Obama, don't you dare spend money to try and restrict Sharia law in the states of America. Not one more penny. You yell at your Congress, pass a law that doesn't allow one penny to be spent in any way, shape, or form by contribution or by government to assist in any form, way, or shape to force a party of the United States, whether it be Democrat or Republican, to vote to allow Sharia law, not to ban Sharia law. That's the first step. And we got to make it a public thing. We got to make it a national happening. We got to get out there and say, no more efforts or money to be given to any firm or fund or group to have them, and CARE's not allowed to go into our states. I mean, we got an Islamist organization going into our state, spending a lot of money bribing people to vote to not ban Sharia law. Does that sound good to you? Does that sound real healthy? I just explained to you where things came from. I just explained to you that Islam won its right to exist from 630 up to about 1050 by taking over and doing things and getting their own governance. That's fine. And they got their own country, and they can run their own country and do whatever they want. But they cannot export, and unfortunately, the Quran says there can only be one religion on earth. And Sharia law can be the only law. So they are required by their religion. Remember, we're required by civic law to do things. We're required. We got to pay taxes. We got to follow the rules as far as red lights and green lights and stuff like that. They're required by their law, the same way we're required by our civil law. They're required by their religious law that rules them, Sharia law, to A, kill us, or B, dominate us. So, and it's bad enough knowing that we got to fight that, but it's far, far worse having a president that wants to help them dominate us. I know I'm being very outspoken about this, but it's time. It's time somebody was. If I'm wrong, prove me wrong. Prove to me that CARE doesn't go into the states and spend money on trying to get Sharia law embedded in our states. Prove to me that the ACLU doesn't go there. Prove to me that 100% of the Democrats in the state of Florida didn't vote to allow Sharia law, not to ban it. They did. It was 100% vote. You think that 100% of the Democrats will vote for something that the national party doesn't want them to vote for or doesn't care about? 100% votes only occur when you have the president and the Democratic Party saying, do this. And they did. They did. Oklahoma, it's happening. Other states, it's happening. You got a problem here. It is the beginning of what we see in Europe. We are no different. We are children of Europe. In most part, we are children of Europe. By the way, this isn't just happening in Europe. The schools are being destroyed in southern Russia by terrorists. They go across from Chechnya and other places in the steppes, and they go across and they destroy children. In China, you have Islamists coming across the border in China, destroying villages, outlying villages. Their religion requires them to dominate the earth. And they're trying. And Europe is a sad fact of that. Somebody's calling me. So anyway, yeah, it's a sad fact that this is occurring. So what I want you to do is I want you to consider all this. I want you to think about all this. I want you to give yourself some time to think about it. I'm getting ready to take some questions now.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do have a caller on the
Okay.
Anyway, you ready for some questions?
Sure, let's have some questions.
All right. So, one question is, why does Obama want Sharia law in the state? Anyway.
Well, it is a great question. Why does Obama want Sharia law in the states? Why doesn't he fight that as I think any state governor would or anybody else would? I mean, why have Sharia law when we see how destructive it is in Europe? Why would we even start thinking about that? And the answer is because he really wants it. I mean, he is a Sunni Muslim. There's no question of that. He comes from a Sunni father, and when you're born of a Sunni father, you are a Sunni Muslim. So he is a Sunni Muslim. I don't know if he still has feelings about that. I don't know if that's part of his belief system. I don't know if he simply believes in it politically, that somehow Islam is better than civic law. I mean, I wish he'd come out and tell us one way or the other, because he certainly does actions or promotes actions that run counter to that. Next question.
Are there really camps of Muslims in America?
Yeah. We have the proof of the one in Texas. We have others. The Texas School District, I just got a notice here, Texas School District to host Islamist conference to fight Islamophobes and promote Islam. So these guys are not only saying we want to live as Islam, we're going to start promoting Islam around the neighborhood. Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's what happened in Europe. Oh, just let us have our little community and it'll be fine. And they get in there and all of a sudden they get their little Islamic council in there, and pretty soon they got their Sharia law, and pretty soon they're expanding that because their job is to expand that. That is their religion. We have to expand and eventually destroy all the people who don't believe in Islam. So, while Americans are lured into complacent sleep by the constant drumbeat of social justice, minority rights, inequality, need for fairness and tolerance, diversity and non-judgmental of others and their views, forces are at work to exploit that sentiment. While the world is filled with news of Islamic terror, other Islamists are at work to silence the critics by holding informational conferences and conducting public outreach. Now, that goes along with something else that I had, and I don't know where my notes are on it, but we actually have a guy who is the president's guy on Islam. And I had a thing about him, but he's a nice Islamist who goes around and promotes Islam. Now, why does the president have a guy to go around and promote Islam? I just want to ask that question. Why is that necessary? Why do we have a president that has a guy that goes around and promotes Islam? Okay? I really want to know that, because the president does have that guy, and if I could find his name, I would tell you right now. But I can't find his name. So we're going to go along with that, though. We're going to say, okay, Mr. President, I guess you can have your guy if you want one, and he can go and be your Islamic ambassador. But don't you think it's kind of silly to have an Islamic ambassador when, in fact, Islam is just trying to destroy us?
Well,
It's just a funny thing. Next question.
Okay, let me look here. It looks like somebody said, why would any American woman want to have a Sharia boyfriend?
Yeah. That is a great question. Why in the world would anybody want to have an Islamic, why would any girl want to have an Islamic girl boyfriend? A Sharia boyfriend. I mean, you got to ask yourself that question. Wow. I don't know if I would be kind of worried if I was a girl about having an Islamic boyfriend, because by their law, they're allowed to beat you. They're allowed to make you not be able to drive. They're allowed to make you dress in certain ways. They're allowed to take away all your makeup. They can go out and cheat, and it's okay. You do it, they can kill you. So that just, it sounds like a little one-sided to me. I'm not sure I'd want my daughter to do that. Go ahead. Next question.
Why does Obama still support Sharia if it violates constitutional law and he swore to protect?
That is the $10,000 question right there. Is why does President Obama want to support Islamism in America? I mean, it obviously violates constitutional law in all kinds of ways. I just can't even imagine for a moment why the president would want that. I cannot. It escapes me totally. Except the one horrible thought that in secret he is 100% Islamist. And this is all just a show for getting what he wants, subtly and slyly.
Could I type anything to use that guy's name for you?
No.
Oh, okay. Let me see if we have... let me see if you have anything else going on in here. You have a caller, but they haven't said that they want to talk. I mean, there's somebody there, but I don't think they want to talk.
Okay.
Why is Sharia law so tough to women? That was the question.
Yeah, we already answered that. The one thing I will say is a people should be allowed to have anything they want. In other words, if you live in Saudi Arabia and the majority of people want Sharia law, they should be allowed to have it. If people are living somewhere and they want that law and they are allowed to vote to have it, then they should be allowed to do that. If a people don't want to live by a religious law, they shouldn't have to. In this country, nobody tells you that you have to live by a religious law. You have to live by civil law, but never a religious law. And our Constitution limits the amount of law that can be applied to you from a civil basis. It doesn't extend it or increase it as the Quran does the law. We tend to be very careful about our laws because they can always be changed at the will of the public. Now, let me tell you something I'm very proud of. I very closely followed Egypt when it went through this last election of removing Morsi. And I watched shamefully as our officials in Washington decried that Morsi was being unseated by a revolution. Morsi, the guy who issued one of the toughest constitutions that had heavier Sharia law than almost any other country in the Middle East. And the women, and let me tell you something, I followed this very closely, and I had friends of mine, two reporters, who were there on site. And both of them came back to me and said, Hedgemaster, Morsi was removed by the women of Egypt. They went to their husbands and demanded it and got beaten for it. They went out on the square and got killed, raped, and maimed on the square publicly in order to get it done. Women were defiled in Egypt, but they went out on that square and demanded that the army remove Morsi until finally El-Sisi, who I consider to be a hero, removed Morsi and took away one of the meanest, nastiest constitutions that's ever been written and freed once again the women of Egypt. Now, I'm telling you, that was a victory. Let me refresh my memory. What did President Obama do? Oh, yeah, he condemned it, and he cut off arms supplies to Sisi for a while until he got over being mad. Why? Oh, I remember why. Those were the same guys that were sitting in the front two rows in 2009 in Egypt University for Obama's big speech that he invited to the prestigious rows. I hate to say that, but everything I'm saying is true. Everything I'm saying, I've researched the heck out of. That's true. Muslim Brotherhood sat in those first two rows. A lot of very, very big dignitaries wanted to come from all over Europe and the world to be there. They couldn't because you had criminals sitting in the first two rows invited by the president. But our president didn't care. Those were his invites. So think about it. If somebody says, that's blue, and you look at it and it looks red to you, and somebody keeps saying, that's blue, and you just, your eyes are telling you it's red, and they keep saying it's blue, are you slowly going to twitch your eye and say, okay, it must be blue and I must be wrong? That's what's happening right now. The president keeps doing things that proves that he is in favor of a lot of the Islamic activities that are going on in this world. And we keep ignoring it and saying he's not. And we have to change our mind at some time. We have to change our mind. When he's trying to get Sharia law into the states of America instead of fighting it, we have to think about why. When he goes over to Egypt and goes to Cairo University and gives a speech and invites in the first two most prestigious rows the Muslim Brotherhood, we have to ask ourselves why. When he sells the most advanced anti-missile systems, or I'm sorry, anti-aircraft missiles, $11 billion worth of attack helicopters and anti-missiles or anti-aircraft missiles to Qatar, who are the funders of the Muslim Brotherhood, ISIS. We have to ask ourselves, why? Why'd he do that? And we have to be honest. We can't just say, well, he's our president. Well, yeah. Yeah, he is our president. But we have to ask why he's doing that. And if we, I think, have to, we have to at least make it public that we know he's doing that and we don't like it. We don't like it. I really don't like the fact that he snubbed the people of France. 40 other leaders supported the French actions. So I don't appreciate that. I don't appreciate that. What's that?
Well, one of your followers wants you to look at this and make a comment on it.
Okay.
And then also, you
What was the comment?
No, you have to come up and look at it.
Oh, okay.
So that whole thing about Garland, Texas, right? There's a place that's almost it. But anyways, they want you to look at this, and then also could you ask the callers, the people that are on their phone calling in,
mm-hmm.
if any of them want to speak, they can press the number one on their dial.
Okay, look, if you want to speak, you can just press number one on your dial. And I've been told that I have to read something here. Frustrated with Islamophobes defaming the prophet, fuming over extremists like ISIS who give a bad name to Islam, remember the Danish cartoons defaming the prophet, or the anti-Islam film Innocence of Muslims? These attacks are no accident. Prophet Muhammad, inspires love and devotion in hearts of Muslims. Peace be upon him. Unfortunately, Islamophobes have turned him into an object of hate. Hate groups in the U.S. have invested at least $160 million to attack our prophet in Islam. Isn't it time we invested in defending our faith? I'm going to stop right there because we can talk about the faith of Islam. I have no argument to the faith of Islam. I have a real problem with Sharia law. I have a terrible problem with Sharia law. The faith of Islam is the faith of Islam. The execution of Sharia law is certainly against our Constitution. It's certainly against our civil rights. And to me, it's against common sense. Much of Sharia law is far, far, far out of the realm of what we consider civil law.
Okay, there is a caller.
Okay.
That wants to ask a question. I don't know how you can identify this one out of the others, but...
Go ahead.
I'm going to put them online.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Put them online.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Caller.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm from Garland, Texas, and I was calling in regarding the Stand with the Prophet conference that they're going to have on GISD school property.
Okay.
It's our special event center, and the Garland, they did not vet the speakers. The speakers are not good people, and I'm very upset over it. And the information that you just read live was talking about how this is not just a conference. It's a movement to begin in the United States to begin to teach children or the Muslim, younger Muslims, second-generation Muslims, how to combat the media, to silence the media with bad things about Prophet Muhammad. And I'm okay with giving them their free speech and letting them do whatever they want, but I'm not okay with their free speech, meaning how to teach their people how to combat and take away my free speech, which that is trying to get the Sharia law over the Constitution.
Which is exactly right. No, you're so right.
We have a protest, and we just don't want them there. We have a protest scheduled for 3 p.m. Till when the conference ends. It's going to be there all day.
So you are scheduling a protest for 3 p.m. what day?
On Saturday the 17th at Curtis Colwell Special Event Center, which is the Garland ISD Special Event Center, next door to high school.
Good. And we're going to root for you, and I know everybody heard that. And so we're going to root for you. I mean, we're going to support you any way we can because you have to do that. We are not against the religion of Islam. I am against Sharia law.
I am violently against
Sharia law.
Well, we have a school board. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Look, Sharia law violates human rights, what we consider to be human rights, and I won't put up with that.
Well, we have a school board meeting Tuesday night at the Garland Harris Hill admin building, and each person gets to speak for 3 minutes, and I'm just begging parents to come anybody, citizens of Garland, anybody in the state of Texas, this is, anybody can come and talk, because we've got to stop it. We've got to get Garland to shut it down.
I wish I was there. I would love to come down and speak. look, you know, I praise you for fighting it. I praise you for sticking up for our children and their future rights, because believe me, in Europe right now, in some parts of Europe, children don't have those rights anymore. They are under Sharia law now, and their women are under Sharia law and being punished and scarred for it. And I feel very badly about that. I do, you know, as I talk, I have Muslim friends. But
I do too.
We don't have, and I won't allow within my area of ability to control, I won't allow Sharia law.
Well, Richardson, Texas, which is just right outside of Garland, Texas, is one of the largest areas where they convene, and they have, like, pretty much taken over certain neighborhoods, and they're
really?
Just pushing their way
Richardson,
further.
Richardson,
Texas, which is, I'm sorry.
Do you have a zip code?
Yes, 75081.
75081, thank you. We're going to look that up, and I'll talk about it the next radio show, because, again, we're going to be very tough on this. I mean, we're not going to give up on this. We are standing up, and you are standing up, and boy, oh, boy, I sure am proud of you. We are standing up for our children's rights to be free.
Yes, I just feel like the United States is only 8 to 10 years behind Europe, Australia, and Sweden and France, and I fear for what's to come in 8 to 10 years if we don't get out there and stop it today. We have to.
Well, and unfortunately, our current president is speeding up the process of them getting in, and that's what's really bothering me. I wouldn't mind it if it at least be neutral on it, but he's actually spending billions of dollars to help them get in.
Yes, that is scary. I don't want them here either. And I know you can be a Bible-thumping extremist, but the problem with the Islam extremists is they're, you know, you're just standing there with your Bible. They're standing there with a gun and their face covered, and they want to kill you, and I'm just not for it.
Yeah, I talked to a colleague of mine who went over to Sweden, and one of his friend's daughters got slashed in the face for not wearing a veil. She has dark hair. And so the group that was going through the streets that night, what they call the Islamic patrols, spotted her and went up to her and said, "Why don't you have your veil?" And she said, you know, something like, "Go to hell." And they slashed her face.
That's horrible.
Now she's scarred for life.
And I believe that, like I said, we're 8 to, you know, 10, 15 years behind them if we don't stop today. And I can't have that with my grandchildren. I got to stop it today.
Yeah, I got to go. Look, I totally
agree
with
you.
And I support you. And if I can do anything for you, if I can set up some speeches for you or read your stuff and help you with it, let me know.
Okay. I will start tweeting it to you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Do I have another caller?
No, they didn't want to talk.
Okay. So, thank you. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody that's been on this show. I don't mean to be raging, but I will not let this country, because a president wants Sharia law, to be put into Sharia law. I have traveled all over the world. I've seen it. I don't like it. I certainly wouldn't let my children live in it. Y'all have a good night. I'll see you next week, and we'll talk about something hopefully a little more inspiring. Bye-bye.